What up, what up, what up, everybody? This is the Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. I am your host, Dr. Dennis Tien. We are recording the day after the NFL Draft. I'm joined, as always, by the CEO of Hedge Better, Justin Fine. This is the place to be for, I think, will be about 30 minutes of commercial-free. Quick takes on the NFL Draft. We're going to record a full episode next week, but we wanted to get out to everyone something today to talk about the big first round last night, which there is a lot to talk about, especially down in Foxborough. Justin, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing great, man. Honestly, I really enjoyed the draft last night. Super entertaining. I think a lot of surprises, some things that made sense, some things that didn't make sense. But overall, I was entertained, man. I thought it was a good first round.
I mean, the picks were like coming in fast.
They were.
For like those
they
first were. 15 picks yeah. were flying.
Yep. Yeah, that was the other thing I noticed. I don't know if they made a concentrated effort to do that this year, but they really seemed to be pushing those picks out, which I liked. It made for a better viewing experience, honestly.
Way better viewing experience. It was really just like very fast paced, entertaining. Really starting right from the beginning with that with the trade, which is actually the first topic I want to get into. We're gonna break down the whole first round when we record a full episode next week, but I thought we could just talk about some of the highlights now and focus on what the Pats did. I think we got to start with this trade that happened last night, and that's kind of my first take on this first round of the draft. And why I'm bringing this up on a Patriots podcast is because I think this trade really is relevant to a lot of what happened in Foxborough, because you look, and this is like one of the first things I thought of, you look at the price that Cleveland got to move back three spots in this draft, picking up a second rounder and another first rounder and another pick on top of that. That could have been the Patriots that got that yield if it wasn't for Gerard Mayo and his legacy, a guy that the worst coach in the NFL in the last 20 years, who didn't even know how to lose right when we really needed him to finally lose a game. For 5 years, we've been watching this team get their ass handed to them by teams like the Buffalo Bills. You can't even lose to a 13-3 team, okay, when you've been losing to those teams consistently all year long. You somehow win that game. Credit to the Buffalo Bills for playing the chess game, for playing the long game. But oh my God, that is the first take I would say from this draft is I'm like, if Gerard Mayo and that Bobo Joe Milton doesn't win that game against Buffalo in week 18, it's the Patriots getting that huge yield.
It is, man. That really puts everything into perspective. And, you know, we've talked about it, how it would have been nice because, you know, and don't forget, that was for the number two pick. We were in the number one spot until that point, right? And like, we've talked about how you know, great it would have been to be able to have that wiggle room and get that haul. And it really does suck that it goes to an organization like Cleveland instead of us. And again, it makes it even more frustrating, the fact that the guy who was at the helm of that game, Joe Milton, again, you can't really fault him because obviously he needs to go out and show out and play his best to, you know, try to secure his career. But then we essentially moved on from him for nothing more than what we drafted him for. So it was just like the ultimate like kick when you're down to look in and see all that play out and then see what the Browns got last night for that number two pick.
Now I will say, Justin, that I think that the Browns fleeced the Jaguars, and that is such a loser franchise thing to do, to trade a king's ransom to move up for a hyped player and give up so much draft capital, you know, to come up three spots to get the big name so that people will pay attention to this loser, desolate franchise that shouldn't even exist in Jacksonville, right? And this deadbeat quarterback, the Mac Jones with long hair I like to call him, you know, and they keep investing in giving this guy weapons and giving this guy support, and he just keeps failing them. There are no more excuses left on in the excuse bucket for Trevor Lawrence. And I think this year will show how mediocre a quarterback he really is. But I just think it was a total loser move for Jacksonville. And for once, the Cleveland Browns played it right, because Shedeur Sanders, if they want him, he's still there for the taking. Right. And they picked up a ton to help a team that, frankly, has a lot of holes.
Yeah, the Cleveland Browns, I mean, they won that trade going away. Obviously, you know where I stand on Trevor Lawrence. They could have brought in the entire first round. I still think that Jacksonville team would bum it next year.
Agreed.
But you know what I really think that was is I you know, I forget the guy's name, but the new GM of Jacksonville, one of the youngest in history, 34 years old. It's his first year. And I thought what he was trying to do actually wound up having the opposite effect, where he was trying to come in as the young kid, you know, the first year guy, a lot of eyes on him, a lot of skepticism. And he was going to try
Gladstone, by the way.
Gladstone. That's what it is. Yep. He was trying to come out. He was trying to make a, you know, a big power move, let everybody know that, you know, him and the Jaguars weren't going to be intimidated. They're not going to be afraid to spend. They're not going to be afraid to make moves. And it's like, all he really did was get his organization fleeced and wound up doubling down, like we said, on a quarterback who's not going to pan out, giving away your first round pick next year, giving away other valuable picks in this year's draft. And I think he was trying to make a statement, but the statement went in against them. I think the statement was that they got pleased.
James Gladstone think this is like a Madden franchise.
That's exactly what that reminded me of. It's like in the Madden franchise where you're like, well, screw it. I'm probably not going to play this for, you know, too much longer anyway. I'll trade away all my picks, you know?
Honestly, like it's just a super inexperienced guy that got totally fleeced that probably doesn't know what he's doing yet.
Right.
And I'm thinking, like, you know, kind of the antithesis of all these years when, you know, nobody wanted to trade with Belichick in the draft for years because they said, oh, he always sees the big picture. And it's like the complete opposite of that, where this is a guy that's like totally clueless, new guy, trying to make a big splash, doesn't see the big picture.
Not at all.
And just made a huge, huge splash, a huge sizzle. But I guarantee you this is going to burn them. And, you know, I'm not enamored with Travis Hunter as a wide receiver. So, I think that needs to be said too. Like, Travis Hunter's best position in my book is going to be cornerback, not wide receiver.
So I will say this. I do think, and you know, I think we might differ a little bit on this. I do think Travis Hunter is going to be a special player. I am a little bit more optimistic that they'll get some two-way value out of him. But with all that being said, the Jacksonville team still has so many holes on the roster that to put all that draft capital and assets behind filling one of them when you still don't have your biggest problem solved, which is quarterback, to me, I don't know. It's just kind of a waste at that point.
They already have a terrific marquee number one wide receiver in Brian Thomas.
Yeah, they hit the nail on the head in last year's draft with that.
They nailed the home run. So if Trevor Lawrence is a football Jesus that everyone thinks he is, I mean, why do you need to go get a second number one wide receiver to prop this guy up? I mean, he's the problem, and he's going to take that whole operation down, I think, because I don't think he's that good. And it's like, just, hey, doubling down, get him another weapon. I don't think it's going to matter.
No, I mean, if anything, you know, and again, I think Travis Hunter's good, but, you know, there's some other talented receivers. I think Jacksonville would have been way better off trading down 5 or 10 picks and grabbing like a Matthew Golden or somebody like that, you know?
Totally. Or just taking Matthew Golden at 5.
Yeah, you could have done that. Exactly. You could have done that too.
And keeping your first round pick next year and your second round pick this year and filling other holes. It was just, I mean, unbelievable. Hey, good for Cleveland, but that could have been the Patriots. Like we talked about it at the time, even leading into that Buffalo game. You know, get that number one pick and find that stupid, desperate team.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Gerard Mayo, you couldn't even lose right, dude. Yep. Worst coach in the NFL in 20 years. Couldn't even lose right. Okay, let's talk about the Pats pick, Justin. Obviously, took Will Campbell with that first pick. Before we even get to what we think about Campbell as a player, can I just say this? Why do the Patriots even have Elliott Wolf at this point? What this is so obviously Vrabel's operation. Right. Campbell is a Vrabel guy through and through. What is Elliott Wolf even doing? Just Robert Kraft, you don't always have to be the nice guy. Just cut the cord and let the guy go. Honestly.
Yeah, I mean, do you think it's somewhat of a buffer zone between becoming too Belichickian again, you know, where you got one guy running everything. It's more so just for show, just to say you got a GM who's there helping make decisions.
I guess so. But my counter to that would be they clearly have one guy running it. So I don't know what Elliott Wolf is doing. He's just like, you know, he's like clearly a completely disempowered middleman that is in a, it's like, it's awkward because he's supposed to be the GM and he's supposed to be the voice of the personnel side of the organization, but clearly he has no power.
No. And you know, I'm okay. And we've talked about this before. I'm okay with it. I'm okay with Vrabel having the power, you know? So,
oh yeah. I mean, he shouldn't, that's what I'm saying. I'm 100% okay with it. Yeah. Like, let it be Mike Vrabel's show. We did the whole multilateral breaking down silos and, you know, collaboration thing last year. And it was a historic, epic shit show. So yep. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Totally okay with it. But I just think it's funny that they even have this guy around. Like, why not just fire him at this point? I mean, let him move on. You know, he's a nice guy. I'm sure he'll have a great career, but obviously he's not going to happen in New England.
Nope.
All right. What'd you think of the pick, Justin? Will Campbell, number four.
So, you know, I don't think it's the sexy pick, but you know, it's really growing on me since they took him. You know, I getting to hear Will Campbell speak, like seeing that emotion. I mean, we didn't get a ton of it. You know, you probably got only maybe 30 to 60 seconds worth of footage from him, you know, after the draft. But even just that 30 to 60 seconds, man, I'm not going to lie, the kid sold me, and I can understand what maybe Vrabel and this organization saw in him. He seems like he's super motivated. He's super tough. He seems to be a leader. He seems to be very, very passionate and professional. Like the kid, you know, the kid basically made me think that we got the best tackle available, which I know was kind of a little bit in question going into last night, because there were some other good names on the board. And we talked about, well, if you're going to go tackle, do you move down and try to get one of those other guys? But Will Campbell, for me, justified that pick last night.
Yeah, I mean, I think he comes off great. He sounds great. He's a leader. I mean, I think he will be a great player in the NFL, in my opinion, with very little doubt. Will it be at a guard or tackle is the question. And I think for me, Justin, to justify this pick and say that this was a good pick, he really has to be a good tackle, not just a guy that transitions to guard and ends up being good at guard. Like, I think, you know, agreed, this tackle is a marquee position. They have a gaping hole at tackle. You have the number four pick.
Yep.
You need to bring in a tackle.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, they obviously took a, you know, kind of a big risk, because that's one of their biggest holes that they needed to fill, right? They took a guy who, you know, there were some question marks about. And you know, look, I feel good about it right now, but to your point, yeah, you definitely need him to pan out. You can't settle with this pick. He can't be average. You can't have a Cole Strange type of situation with this kid.
No, you can't have that. Now, it could be, look, he could be like a Nate Solder or a Matt Light. That's not a Hall of Famer, but that's like a good, you know, 10-year starter.
Yeah.
That's what you need at the bare minimum from this pick.
Exactly. And the kid filled me with confidence that he can be that, but obviously, look, talk is cheap. But you know what? I trust that whatever Vrabel saw in him when he evaluated his character and his skills, and like, you know, we were talking the other night, you know, Skarnecchia, I'm sure he signed off on that pick, right?
Right. So,
and you know what the funny thing too is?
Well, Skarnecchia has already publicly said that he thinks the arm length thing is a non-issue. So that means a lot to me personally. If Skarnecchia says it, then that makes me feel a lot better.
Yeah, and the other thing too that I just want to call out real quick, because I don't know, maybe some people were a little confused like I was. You know, if the arm length thing really got clarified for me last night, and we're talking about an eighth of an inch.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so we're up in arms over an eighth of an inch. You know what I mean? Right. Like that to me seems like a negligible factor.
It is. And I think it has been a little overstated, because some of the things said in the media in Boston, I think actually aren't true. Like, it's been said that there's been no tackles in the league that have arms this long in like 20 years. I think that's actually something that was literally said, but that's actually not true. There are, I think, 7 or 8 tackles in the league right now that have arm lengths, the same length as Campbell. Now, none of them have made Pro Bowls.
Right.
I think most of them are right tackles, not left tackles, but he's not that far off the roadmap of playing tackle in this league.
No, not at all. And that's kind of the thing for me. You know, if it was some sort of glaring issue where he's like, you know, he's got T-Rex arms and he's inches shorter than where he should be, like, it's like, okay. But, you know, when they're talking about it and it comes down to an eighth of an inch, a quarter of an inch, I'm like, all right, how much stock are we really going to put in that?
Right. And there's been so much focus on arm length that like people have ignored some of the other things. Like, for example, this guy gave up 2 sacks in 1,000 snaps the last 2 seasons in the SEC.
Yeah.
That's impressive. I think 4 sacks in his whole career. There's only 2 tackles in the combine in like the last 10 years that have done as well as he did on some of like the other drills and measurables, like, you know, cone drills and high jump and combine it all together. And both of them were all pros. That was, one of them was Tristan Wirfe. I forget who the other one was. Yeah. Forgive me, the name escapes me. But like, this guy also has a lot of tangibles and measurables that are actually really great.
Right, right. And what are hopefully going to accompany what seems to be strong intangibles and immeasurables. Yep.
Extremely strong intangibles.
Right.
You know, and the thing about it, Justin, is look, I wanted them to take Tyler Warren, who, by the way, slid. I can't believe how far he slid. I think we have to be pragmatic about this pick. We have to at least, let's not judge it until we actually see this guy on the field. It is possible that he could be a franchise tackle. So right. I don't think we should just like be so dismissive. Like, I've heard some people be just so dismissive of this guy because his arms are, like you said, an eighth of an inch short. Let's see what happens when they get out on the field this summer and this fall. You know, it could very well be that this team just drafted an all-pro 10-year tackle with the number four pick. That is totally possible. It's also possible he might be a better guard down the road, given what we've seen. We don't know yet. I feel like we have to be pragmatic and just let it play out a little.
Yeah, no, you obviously got to let it play out. Like you said, you really can't tell now. But here's the only thing you can tell is what he's done in the past. And from what he's done at the past, he's played at a very high level, at the highest level of college football. And so I look at that, and that tells me it's like, okay, obviously the NFL is a different game. It's a different animal. There's a lot that's TBD. But, I mean, right now I feel pretty good about where he stands.
Yeah. I agree with that. I agree with that. And I think like it's not sexy. It's not the hot take. We all have to have the hot take today and we're going to be up in arms. Let's just see the guy put on pads and play a little bit before we rush to any conclusions about what he might or might not be. So I don't know. Any other thoughts about Campbell, Justin?
No, just the last thing I'll just say is that if he does hit and he does turn out to be a 10-year franchise player, like, left tackle is the most glaring issue on this entire roster, I think, at this point. So it's like, you know, if it might not be the sexy position or the sexy pick, but if he hits, I mean, we solved our biggest problem and we added a very valuable asset to our young second year quarterback.
Exactly. And I'm just glad, like, left tackle is not just an issue this year. It's been like a 7-year issue since they've missed on Isaiah Wynn. Yeah. I'm just happy that they got back in the batter's box and took a big swing to try and address what has been really a huge problem for this offense for almost a decade.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. I love, I really love what they did. You know, I liked it at the time, and by this morning, after everything I've seen, I kind of love it. I'm not going to lie. So it's winning me over.
What do you, the last thing I want to talk about are the Pats. What do you want to see them do tonight in the rest of the draft? Because I'll tell you right now, if I'm them with that number 38 pick, I think I'm taking another tackle. I really do. Like, I'm not counting on Morgan Moses. He might work out great. Fine. They don't have a third tackle on this roster. They're one injury away from being back to Vidarian Lowe again. I would seriously, it is such a position of need. I think they should take another swing on another offensive tackle.
So I actually love that because, you know, the guy that if they didn't go Will Campbell that I wanted them to target was Josh Simmons, right? Who wound up being the 32nd pick to Kansas City, right? The Ohio State guy, big, athletic. He dropped because he's coming off of an injury. I was actually really hoping they were going to trade back up into the end of the first round to grab somebody like him.
Well, as you know, Philadelphia and Kansas City traded picks.
They swapped.
So the door was open.
Right. Exactly. So I was a little surprised that the Patriots didn't try to move back up into the second round. I mean, you know, I look at the first round rounded out, right? And you look at the last three picks of the first round, Maxwell Hairston, who's a really good cornerback, Jahad Campbell, who's the best linebacker in the draft, and Josh Simmons, who, barring injury, would have given Will Campbell a run for his money for the first offensive tackle taken. So some really good talent fell to the back of that first round. And I'm a little surprised, not just the Patriots, but I'm a little surprised other teams weren't looking to move up and do something with that.
I 100% agree with what you just said. The Patriots should have traded with the Philadelphia Eagles and grabbed Josh Simmons. It would have been the perfect pick for them. Yeah. Having him come in to be a third tackle on this team, you know, having time for him to rehab and get his strength back, whatever, not really totally 100% relying on him. Kansas City, is going to need him to come in and play tackle for them like right away. And maybe that will work. Maybe it won't. But if the Patriots had taken him with Campbell here now and with Morgan Moses, you probably could have given him, you know, some time into the season before he had to actually play. So I 1,000% agree. Like the Patriots should have hopped right back in and grabbed him, but there are still good linemen available and the Patriots should take another one at 38.
And you know what? It tells me hopefully that they got a couple people in their sights that they're not worried about falling to them in the second round. It tells me that hopefully there's a couple of guys that they think will be a good fit that they know that they can get.
Yeah, I hope so. I think there are still a few good tackles available. I'm okay with their wide receiver core. It's obviously not great, but I feel like for where this franchise is and the amount of holes they filled in this offseason, I can live with this wide receiver core if nothing else changes. As much as I would love it if they drafted a wide receiver and it turned out hitting, hey, that's great. But if we're just rolling with what we have, I'm kind of okay with that too. I really don't want to see Drake May having to pick himself up off the ground, you know, 12 times a game again. Because I think that is just terrible for his development and obviously stifling to this offense.
Exactly. Look, it's a snowball effect. The O-line gets better, Drake May gets better. And if Drake May gets better, the receivers get better. Right. So I think it worked out really well for them. But again, I like the Will Campbell pick, but to your point, I would have loved to see them move up and double team that and get Josh Simmons. And then you got the two top rated tackles, essentially in, you know, you got a lot of options going into this year.
Yeah, I mean, we'll see what they do at 38. And you know, the draft is funny because it could well be the best tackle in the draft to some guy from the fourth round that none of us have ever heard of. So you got to take some swings here too. Any other thoughts about the first round? We're going to get more in depth into this on Tuesday when we record a full episode, but just any quick hit thoughts, things that surprised you, players that fell. We should talk about Shedeur Sanders, right? Were you surprised he fell to the second round?
So I'm very surprised he fell. So look here, and you know what? Once the Giants passed up on him, you know, on three, I said, okay, you know, we're hearing the Saints love him at nine. You know, the Steelers might be looking to trade up for him. You know, the Browns or the Giants might trade back into the first round for him. And you know, I'm hearing all this stuff, and then okay, the Saints go take an offensive lineman, and I'm like, that's a little suspicious, right? He falls to Pittsburgh, and at the time, I'm thinking to myself, oh, okay, well, this is a done deal. Pittsburgh, they're the absolutely luckiest, you know, they're the luckiest sons of guns on the planet. They didn't even have to trade up. He fell into their lap, right, and they bypassed on him for a defensive tackle when they already got a stacked defensive unit. The Giants trade back up, and they don't even take him. They take another quarterback. Right. So I think goes to show you, you know, and this is a guy that was arguably up until like a month or two ago, it was a debate who was going to be the first quarterback taken. Could he have potentially even been the number one pick? And now he fell out of the first round completely. I think it really goes to show just how important the intangibles are, because he's obviously a talented quarterback, but I just feel like he's good. He's not interviewing well. He's coming off as arrogant. And
do you think he rubbed some of these franchises the wrong way with the whole thing with Dion and the prime stuff and like
I do
having to deal with that, you know?
It reminds me almost of like the you know, like the LeVar Ball and Alonzo Ball situation, right? Back to the NBA a few years ago. Yeah, it was like
a lot like
A lot of people were talking about it like, well, look, do you want to deal with the headache of having a LeVar Ball chirping in the media, criticizing what you do? And that's what I think it was. It's like, do these organizations really want the added distractions, the added hype, the added attention, the added pressure, you know, Coach Prime coming on the TV, you know, every Monday recapping what the team did wrong and how they should have helped Shedeur do this. And it's like, do you want that if you're an organization?
I mean, there were rumors that like Sanders was going into some of these franchises with top five and top 10 picks and saying, I'm not a good fit for your franchise. Don't take me. I'm sorry. Like, you're not that kind of player that can dictate those terms. Those kind of guys, Andrew Luck, John Elway's, you know, they come around once every 10, 20 years. Right. Sanders, I think, is worthy of being a first round pick, but he's not that good that he could do that. I think he rubbed a lot of these teams the wrong way. I am shocked that the Pittsburgh Steelers didn't take either him or Jackson Dart right. with the 21 pick. Who the heck is going to play quarterback for Pittsburgh? They have $10 million weapons and a 50-cent quarterback in Mason Rudolph right now. I mean, is it a fait accompli? Has it already been decided that Rodgers is going there? And if so, good luck with that. The Steelers don't have a second-round pick. So they're pretty much out, I think, of this whole thing. So, like, that's really interesting that they didn't take a chance on either of these two guys. And then I think it's really interesting, like you said, that the Giants come back in and they went with Jackson Dart over Shedeur Sanders. And some of the reporting on that, it makes a little more sense now because I guess Brian Daboll is still tight with Charlie Weiss's son, who is Dart's college coach at Mississippi. Yeah. So maybe that's the link right there. But, you know, obviously the Giants, they took a very long, hard look at Shedeur Sanders and they passed twice.
They did. They passed twice. And now I get the big question is who decides to pull that trigger? I mean, you know, everyone's talking Cleveland's in the clock now. You talk about what could be a really good draft for Cleveland. I mean, I'm not super high on Mason Graham, but that aside, you know, you fleece the Jaguars and you add significant capital. You take a first round defensive talent and then Shedeur falls into your lap in the beginning of the second round. Like that could be a really, really good.
Yeah. You know, I think Cleveland should take Shedeur right with this first pick. Cleveland has, by the way, if people lost track of this, they have the 33rd and the 36th pick. They have two of the first four picks tonight because of the trade they made yesterday, which is just like, I mean, that's just such a yield, but they're really in position now, I think, to take Sanders. And I think they'd be crazy not to take a chance on him at this point.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think the guy's talented. I actually, you know, it's not that I think Shedeur Sanders is going to be for sure a franchise quarterback or, you know, he's going to be a stud in the NFL. But I think the kid's upside in potential is high enough that I can't really understand outside of maybe the off the field stuff or the attitude stuff, the ego stuff, how he fell. Because the general trend from what we saw the last couple of years in drafts was, if anything, you took risks on guys and you took them higher than they even were anticipated going just at the upside shot of get hitting on a franchise quarterback. And that trend from the last few years was totally reversed.
It was, and you're so right. And that's why I had Sanders mocked at 6 to the Raiders.
Yeah.
You had him mocked at 3.
The
Giants. I never in my wildest dreams thought he'd make it out of the first round for the exact reason you said. It only takes one team to fall in love with this guy, whether it's Trey Lance, Anthony Richardson, Bo Nix last year, JJ McCarthy last year. These were all guys that were given second round grades, and then somebody fell in love and made an aggressive move to get them. Mm-hmm. The take home from what happened last night is that nobody fell in love with Shedeur Sanders.
Yeah. And you could argue not only did nobody fell in love, they actually, I think, had negative feelings towards him. The pendulum swung. Not only did they not love him, but it went past being indifferent to the point where they have a negative viewpoint of him.
But you know, I like the player. I do think he could be a good NFL quarterback. I would totally say to any team looking for a quarterback, especially Cleveland.
Yeah.
Look, your season's going to be a lot better this year if you got Shedeur Sanders on that roster. And I mean, the Browns are a dead in the water franchise with a terrible quarterback situation and the worst contract probably in the history of the NFL, dragging them down. You know, taking a gamble on a guy like Sanders is a great gamble to take. The last thing I want to talk to you before we wrap it up, Vegas Raiders and Ashton Jeanty pick. I didn't love this one, to be honest with you. Again, I thought Sanders would go to the Raiders, but like, look, I don't see Ashton Jeanty moving the needle for Vegas at all. I think Ashton Jeeney and Geno Smith is a ticket to a 6 or 7 win season. I would have liked to have seen Jeeney go somewhere with that quarterback in place where he could be that complimentary piece that puts someone over the edge, like Chicago is a good example. I think I had him mock to Miami, even Dallas, San Francisco, I think would have been better fits. I just don't see it working with the Raiders.
No, you know what? I think the thing that's been interesting with running backs is, and you know, running backs have kind of had a revival the last couple of years, especially last year with Saquon Barkley and the Eagles, right? And I think my big takeaway is, no matter how good or no matter how dominant a running back is, a la Saquon Barkley, their landing spot, the team they have around them, is a huge, huge factor, right? Like, what made you know, Saquon so perfect for the Eagles was that they were really a dominant running back away from being a totally, totally complete team, right? Whereas you look at like the Raiders, and I don't care how good Ashton Jeanty is, he might be on day one of the best running backs in the world. But it's like, if that team is as desolate as they are and they have as many needs as they do, you know, what good does it really have? I mean, again, look at what the Giants did with Saquon Barkley,
right?
Because they didn't have the rest of the team in place. Look what the Panthers did with Christian McCaffrey when they didn't have the rest of the team in place, right? So it's like,
I'm not sold on this whole running back renaissance thing that everyone's talking about. Like, I look at the Eagles team, best offensive line in the NFL in the last 5 years, and a good young quarterback. I look at the Ravens, MVP Lamar Jackson, right?
Right.
What did any of these running backs do before they had those teams and those quarterbacks? Exactly. The answer is nothing.
Right.
I'm still not convinced in this whole running back thing. And that's why I definitely didn't want the Pats to take Jeanty and why I don't think the Raiders are a good fit for him.
Yeah. No, I think he'll be there. You know, their bell cow back. I think he'll get a lot of work because they don't really have a ton of talent on that roster. But you know, Ashton Jeanty is not going to plug into the Raiders offense and all of a sudden make them a playoff contender, make them a 10-11 win team. Like, you know, they have a long way to go before that happens. So, I mean, look, they got a good player, but they're not a complete enough team for it, I think, to be significant.
And plus, too, they just had a really good running back with Josh Jacobs. And what did that win?
Right.
Absolutely. Okay, right. Any other thoughts? I think, you know, we'll record again Tuesday. We can go more in depth. We'll at that point know a little more about what the Pats did with their remaining picks, what happened in the second round tonight.
Yep.
But I think, you know, I think it's, you know, there's a lot that will happen that hasn't happened yet. I'll say that.
I do too. Yeah, and I think, you know what? There's a lot of talent that's still
a lot of talent.
So, and you know what, even though the Patriots didn't make a move, there's going to be a lot of talent that's available in a few picks when the Patriots are back up on the clock. So
no doubt. And what's the thing we heard about this draft consistently all spring? Picks 10 through 50 are basically the same category of player.
Right.
So those guys are out there.
Yep.
Find them.
Yep, for sure.
All right, brother, we're going to wrap it up. I want to thank everyone that listened. Check us out. Find us on Facebook. Find us on our YouTube channel, Dr. Football Ultimate Patriots Podcast. We will see you next week for another episode, wrapping up the entire draft. Enjoy rounds 2 and 3. Have a great weekend, and be safe, everyone. Be good.